Blog Talk Radio.
I was talking to my best friend. I told her I wasn't feeling like myself. I had pain in my pelvic area and bleeding that wasn't normal for me. She said I had to go to the doctor. Turned out I had uterine cancer, a type of gynecologic cancer. I received treatment and we're confident I'll be fine. Please listen to your body. If something doesn't feel right for 2 weeks or longer, see your doctor.
Get the inside knowledge about gynecologic cancers. A message from the Inside Knowledge Campaign and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Good morning, and welcome to Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. I'm your host, Joy Keys. I want to thank you for tuning in. You can follow me on Twitter.com/Joy Keys, and you can become a fan on Facebook. Just look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. Oh, and guess what? Now I'm on Instagram. Yes, lots of cool pictures about past guests, and sometimes I throw in just some funny things that have been going on in my life. So follow Saturdays with Joy Keys on Instagram. I want to thank you so much for tuning in. I really appreciate your support. Getting close to 800,000 downloads. Wow, just amazing. Could not have done that without your support. So I just want to say again, thank you so much for tuning in. Well, today, another wonderful, beautiful, talented author, Unya Kempadu, her third novel, All Decent Animals, a beautiful look into Caribbean life, some soft, some harsh, beautiful, luxurious. It's almost like eating a mango, her book. So please pick up a copy, All Decent Animals. I'll be giving away a copy of the book. So again, follow on Twitter, become a fan on Facebook. Good morning, Unya.
Yes, I can. Good morning.
Oh, okay. Okay, good morning. Thank you so much agreeing to do the interview.
Thank you for having me on the show. It's a great privilege. It's a great service that you're doing to everyone with, seeing the amount of downloads that you have. It's obviously a gap that you're filling. Thank you.
Well, I love doing it. I've learned so much doing the show. It's been a blessing to me, and I'm hoping it also goes out to the people listening. It's a blessing to them. So, I just try to keep doing it. But you are a great author. This is your third book now. So you are on a roll. Let's talk about the beginning, the title of the book, All Decent Animals. There's a lot of comparing the different characters to animals. I noticed that in there. Some people are wolves, some people are deer, you got rabbits. Talk to me about this title.
It comes from something I think that's stayed with me since I was a child, of seeing animal characteristics in people to really sort of characterize them easily, not in a derogatory way, but just in recognizing how sort of instinctively we respond to each other and act, particularly in times of crisis.
Yeah, I mean, also in terms of, if I think about like Yoruba, different types of religions, people, gods associated with animals, you know, like the trickster being a fox or things of that nature, you know. So I think culturally, different cultures, it comes through the culture that we are related to animals. Even Native American culture, people choosing the eagle or different things that represent them or the spirit takes over them is an animal, you know.
Exactly. It's a very traditional way of linking humans to animals, sort of nature and spirituality in some sense.
So how long did it take you to write this book?
Oh, this one was a long one. I started it 10 years ago, and I, you know, put it down several times, started other things in between it. It was very challenging and a difficult book to write, hence the long gap from my second book to this one.
Yeah. So 10 years. What is your process? What inspired you to choose the topics? You're talking about HIV/AIDS, you're talking about domestic violence, but then you have the beautiful carnival, and I can visualize the colors of the costumes. What inspired you? Just your experiences in the islands, or did something happen that said, okay, I need to write about these important topics?
It is very closely connected to my experience with Trinidad and my work in carnival there, and, you know, personal experiences that really sort of made me want to write about the relationships around terminal illness or crisis because it really sort of brings out all of humanity's challenges and ways of dealing with a personal issue. So it is very closely connected to my experience in Trinidad and observation.
Well, one of the statistics I was reading, the number of new HIV/AIDS cases peaked in 2003 in Trinidad and Tobago to 1,709 new infections. The highest rate, the group that's increasing the most in terms of infections are 15-year-olds to 24-year-olds. Those are 20% of the new infections of people with HIV and AIDS in Trinidad and Tobago. So it is a definite issue, and, you know, thankfully it seems to be going down. But it could be going down only because people aren't reporting. You know, sometimes if people don't report something, then we don't have statistics. So it doesn't mean it's not there. Hello? Hi, Unya. Sorry, somehow we got disconnected.
Yes, I'm so sorry about that. I was just trying to call you back from the other phone.
That's okay. That's okay. We got you here. So, Bless, why don't you read a part of your book? You talked about reading the earlier sections.
Yes, I can read from the opening of the book.
That would be great.
From the time Atta came to visit this place as a shy child, she told herself, this is a place for adults. From the time them lovely Maracas ways first showed her up, when she saw teenagers dressed like big people, rich homes flashing TV style, everybody rushing, buying food, driving and eating and drinking, Pekong talk flying, she promised herself, she would come back to this fancy Peacock Island. But she never trusted the perfume strutting, and Trinidad never promised her anything, never once invited her, no matter how many times Atta came from her island home. Because Trinidad is a metropolis, she thought, a complicated process and a place to be keeping up with itself, carrying on at a rate, horrendous rate. Every time in the taxi from Piako Airport to Port of Spain, she could see the mess of it right there, all along the road without shame or design, ignoring her arrival. Today, the customs man doesn't bother with her bags. He glances at Atta's mixed-race complexion. You come back home? He asks, just after immigration finished giving her hell for visiting the home of the greatest show on earth yet again. Yes, she says. She does live here now.
Unya, can you still hear us?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, sorry. You start from when she got off the airport and immigration officer, that section, that's where we dropped out.
Okay, sorry. Outside the shiny cheap tile airport, the Indian taxi driver has her bag. Where are you going on Upper Hill? Because my car is cut out on Steep Hill. No need to answer. Business as usual, down the highway. Atta looks out at familiar gaudy shopping malls and incomplete housing schemes, factories, fast food chains, mosques, the Hindu girls' school. On this island of oil with its asphalt, sun, and pothole roads, the highways are packed with cars crawling like shiny lice.
I'm going to try one other number for Unya to see if we can reach her, because we still have a couple minutes left in the podcast. Again,
hello,
I apologize.
Joy?
Hi.
I'm
okay,
so
I'm
sorry
fine.
For this.
That's okay. It happens. Technology.
So sorry.
So,
and the phone I'm not used to.
That's all right. That's all right. So let's talk about this HIV/AIDS. I was just talking to the audience a little more about that. And the church.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you brought the church into the story. And what is their job? They're building this, you know, elaborate new church in the middle of this impoverished neighborhood. You know, what is the purpose of the church in our community today? You know, what do you think the purpose of the church is today?
Well, that's what Atta is questioning to the architect, Fraser, because the church can serve more of as a community center to deal with the needs of that community more than I think they actually do. So on top of being a house of worship and a place for fellowship, to meet the needs of the community for the children, the youth, is something that I think is brought up in that way, and that I think is much needed, particularly in the Caribbean. And it's happening in some of the newer denominations.
Yeah, because, you know, you talk about domestic violence, you talk about classism, racism. These are all things that, you know, cause depression, cause anxiety, all these things. And the church is, you know, praying to God is helpful, but I think there has to be some action behind the prayer. You know, you can't just tell people, okay, you have a problem, go pray to God. I don't think that's work. I think, yes, pray to God, use that power that you maybe get from God to then go out and, you know, educate people or provide resources, because just praying is not going to work. You know, just go sitting in the church is not going to work, I don't think.
Yes, exactly. And in Grenada, actually, I think I'm blessed to be able to see this happening with the Mount Zion Full Gospel Revival, and how they serve the community beyond just prayers, deliverance, counseling, just all sorts of support services.
Another heavy topic is euthanasia. Shouldn't we be able to kill ourselves when we're suffering the way one of the characters is suffering? The church character comes, the priest comes in on that. His friends are upset. Some are okay with it, some are not. Do you mind sharing, like, what your personal feeling about that is?
Well, I think it should be our personal choice, but it raises all sorts of religious and individual responses, which are not necessarily supportive to the person who is in that situation. So the point of having it in there and dealing with it in a very intimate way is to show really if you are caring for and involved in someone's life and supporting them, you have to put aside your personal choices and morals, really, I think, to support the person best to what their choice is. I think that's what we can do generally in life too, that, you know, we support each other as long as it's not detrimental, and if there is no other hope, and that's the person's choice, then that's why the priest and the doctor almost find a way to really do that also.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. In America, there's a couple states who you can do it. In Seattle, Washington is one of them, but it's not accepted all over, you know, and it's only if there's no other choice, so to speak. I personally believe the person should be allowed to do it. I believe, you know, because people are suffering with chronic illnesses that, yes, they can live better than they have in the past, but they still are constantly in pain every day. And I don't think it's weak to necessarily say, okay, I don't want to keep dealing with this chronic pain. You know, I mean, and pain you can't see sometimes. The person can look healthy, but they're in extreme pain. There are a lot of illnesses like that, you know. And so I think the person should have the choice and not be looked down upon as if they're weak. You know, that's my personal, you know, opinion.
And I think that's why there's more clear kind of choices that you have to make in a hospital and an emergency situation now, to whether you want to be kept alive on life support or not, because it has become a much more sort of sensitive but explored choice now, that I think you do have options on. But at the time, HIV/AIDS was seen as, when this is set, it was seen as a terminal illness. And that has changed with medicine now. But still, I find there's a void of dealing with the subject of living with HIV/AIDS, or the changes and the way it impacts on someone's life. I understand it's, you know, almost 100,000 persons in New York alone died of HIV/AIDS. But we don't still acknowledge, I think, that the great loss that we went through from this disease.
No, I think because, like I was saying earlier, I think when we got disconnected, it's like people don't talk about it as much now, and somehow is it still going on? It's still going on, and people are living with it.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Right now, people are living. We're at a different stage now. People are living 20, 30 years, having jobs, working, but it affects their other so many areas of their life, the amount of medicines they have to take on a daily basis. You know, they are still more susceptible getting sick. Who's going to care for them? Who's comfortable caring for them? How are they going to pay for all this medicine, the cost of, you know, living with any chronic illness is just crazy in terms of, you know, medicine.
Yeah.
That's a big business. You know, sometimes people think they're not trying to come up with a cure for certain things because these companies just want to stay in business.
Yes, yes. And at the time in the 80s and the 90s when the medicine was evolving, so it was available, but it was just so expensive, like not just treatments for HIV AIDS, but other illnesses like renal failure. If you can't afford it, basically you have to die.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a tough choice that I think, you know, we don't often recognize or realize how many people are faced and involved in that situation around us.
Yeah. Now, one of the things you bring up in the book is some folklore, folk tales. Talk to the audience, and I just want the audience to know, we might get cut off from streaming, but Sheena will continue to talk, and then I'll edit the interview so you can still hear the whole thing. Talk about Lagahu, or am I saying it correctly? Lagahu.
Lagahu. Lagahu.
Yeah, what is this? And I mean, I
kind of
know what it is, but talk to the audience about that.
We have different versions of the Lagahu, the Sukuya, which are like a sort of vampire type of spirit. And her sort of interaction in that spirit world, I connect to her beginning to write. And also to the notion of people seeing the process of writing and going into that imaginative space and into your mind in that way as something connected to the supernatural, or, you know, you must be going a little off, or way of dealing in a connecting with this spiritual sort of a mystical world that is not necessarily positive. So the Lagahu really, this is how Sami interprets her connection with that spirit world in the language that he knows and the mythology of Trinidad. So that's how I try to bring it in.
Yeah, you kind of caught me off guard. I was reading it, then I said, "What is she cheating? What? Whoa, okay." I had to go back, you know, and read it again because I said, "What? Maybe she's saying this," because I was a little confused at first, you know. But that was good. That was good. I like to be kept on my toes when I'm reading, you know. I know what's gonna happen. I know the story, and then something comes in. You're like, "Oh, okay," you know. It was also good with Sam's character. Oh, I so loved him. He was so endearing, the driver. I really felt you invested a lot in him. He really had a whole life. He had the friends, you know, the people he was driving, but you saw his family, you saw his love life, you saw his on the buddies on the corner, you know, with the old guys rapping and the music, you know, talking to each other. Really was a very full character, even though Atta was the main character. I mean, what's your opinion? Is Atta the main character? Was he the main character? You know what I mean? There was a lot of Sam everywhere, a lot of rabbit jumping.
that's good that he came out so strong. I think, I mean, Atta to me is the main character, but Sami popped up when I was stuck. And as soon as he appeared or arrived in the story, then that ease of speaking that whole language and portraying a whole different element and side of Trinidad was a lot more easier. And I think he can say, and he shows through his life a more balanced perspective. So, you know, because the other characters tended to be more middle class, urban Trinidad's characters, whereas Sami brought a very down to earth working class perspective with all of the riches and the sort of intimacies of Trinidad culture in a way that to me felt more organic. So I was more comfortable with Sami's character.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's an issue of class that you bring up, even with the parents of different characters and how they look down on who they're associating with and who they should marry.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the issues that Sammy is facing. The woman he loves, her father does not like him because he's black. And then in
mm-hmm.
terms of Frasier's parents, there's class there. And then the interracial relationships. Now, let me ask you, is Atta you? Are you Atta?
It's based on me, so you can partly, but the issue of me being mixed race, the issue of how much classism, particularly, and racism still exists in our societies, even though we don't really like to think so. The difference between, I think, the Caribbean society and the U.S. society is that it's dealt with in a much more open way in our societies. You know, we while it's not acknowledged formally, it exists in the behaviors and the language, and it's something that you live with. But at the same time, you break those boundaries too.
Yeah.
By Douglarizing.
You open the right. Now you open the book with Louis Kahn, who's from Philadelphia. He's a Philadelphian. I'm in Philadelphia, so I thought that was really I don't know. I thought, okay, this means I'm supposed to talk to her, you know, somehow when I
thank you.
No, I mean that seems, you know, I think I don't know, serendipitous somehow. I don't know, but that's just me. let me read a little bit of that there. It says, to express is to drive, and when you want to give something presence, you have to consult nature, and there is where design comes in. And if you think of a brick, for instance, and you say to brick, what do you want, brick? And the brick says to you, I like an arch. And if you say to brick, look, arches are expensive, and I can use a concrete lintel over you. What do you think of that, brick? Brick says, I like an arch. Because the character Frasier is an architecture. Is there an architecture in your life? Did you want to be an architect? What's with the architecture?
Well, connected to a great friend who introduced me to architecture in Trinidad, I see the connection between an architect's creativity and how they work to a writer's journey. And by the end of this book, the search for coming to terms with that, the need to create and respect also for the form, is what the book also became about. So because one of the central characters is an architect, and in real life I had many great discussions with him about the role of design and nature and just creativity. How do you live with it and design around what we need and how we live. So that really influenced me and the subject and the this particular quote in the book.
Also, in terms of art, you have artists, you have the architect, you also have Atta, who started out as a graphic designer, but then she's dealing with the carnival costumes. I mean, that's an art form, carnival. And then she goes into writing. So you have a great respect for the art. Do you do any other art forms other than writing? Can you sing? Can you dance? Can you play an instrument?
I wish. I used to do a graphic arts, and I did work in the carnival arts. And it was in Trinidad, really, that I found new Caribbean art forms that I think brought me to writing. Working with Peter Minchell was a great experience, and I left. I went to Europe to go to art school, but I didn't go through with it, and came back to Trinidad and worked in the Mass Camp and with that designer. So to me, the way that I was exposed to different forms of art in Trinidad helped to define me as an artist, and I think there's a lot of interrelationship between the art forms. No one is without the other. That's why the music, the lyrics of the Kaiso and Calypso of Trinidad are part of the book also, because they're all connected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have a lot of music and musical. And also, you different authors that you quote. Who's some of your favorite authors that you read?
Favorite as in all time, or that's the difficult one because
yeah,
you keep
time,
reading.
Sam
Selvan, I would have to say. Edwidge Danticat is one of my favorite authors too. Juno Diaz. but you know the language and how Sam Selvan really began to show a way how the Creole English could be written and used to show the rhythm and the intonation
yeah.
of the accent without making it difficult to read really influenced
mm-hmm.
me quite early.
There's a musicality to different languages, you know. Remember that's one of my loves is learning different languages. So like I speak a little bit of English, I speak a little Chinese, I speak a little Yoruba, I speak, you know, some Japanese. But it's like somebody says, you know, I can't tell who you are, but if you start speaking, then somehow I can tell, you know, like there are different Asian ethnicities, but they have a different tonality,
mm-hmm.
you know, or a different
yeah.
Areas of the island. They have different tonality, different African languages, different guttural or nasal, high pitch,
yeah.
chop and chop. It's music, you know, language is music, you know. And so to be able to get it on paper and people to be able to digest easily, I think is important. And also opens their eyes to something new, something other than what they do every day. Yeah,
yeah and that's the challenge of writing it also, that you want to get that rhythm and lyricism and the intonation, but you want to make it as readable as possible. But the question of when do you start editing or translating, is it from when you're thinking to when you're writing, or after you've written, then you start editing? It's a tricky one to try to address, and I think Caribbean writers are faced with constantly, because you always have to look at how readable and acceptable would this be to persons who are not used to hearing it or don't know what it sounds like.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, I want to say thank you so much for coming on today. I'm sorry we had so many technical difficulties, and I appreciate you staying on a little longer to talk to me.
I'm so sorry about that, too. My apologies.
That's okay.
And again, it was really a privilege to be invited and to speak with you today. Thank you so much.
Let me just mention to the audience again, this is your third book. You have two other books, Buxton Spice and Tide Running, so they should check those out. I'll be giving away a copy of your book, so you want to follow me on Twitter, at Joy Keys, or become a fan on Facebook. Also, you can tag me in a picture on Instagram, Saturdays with Joy Keys. Unya, thank you so much. Again, I wish you much success with this book, and you have to come back when you write your fourth book.
We'll try. Thank you very much again.
Okay, have a wonderful Saturday.
Okay, you too.
Okay,
all the best.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Bye-bye, and I'm sorry for the technical difficulties. I'm going to edit the show, and we'll have a smoother conversation to follow. But, again, follow me at Joy Keys on Twitter. Become a fan on Facebook. Check me out on Instagram, Saturdays with Joy Keys. Also, you can email me. My email address is saturdayswithjoykeys@hotmail.com. I hope you have a wonderful Saturday and a great weekend.
I was talking to my best friend. I told her I wasn't feeling like myself. I had pain in my pelvic area and bleeding that wasn't normal for me. She said I had to go to the doctor. Turned out I had uterine cancer, a type of gynecologic cancer. I received treatment and we're confident I'll be fine. Please listen to your body. If something doesn't feel right for 2 weeks or longer, see your doctor.
Get the inside knowledge about gynecologic cancers. A message from the Inside Knowledge Campaign and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.